this morning is Tank against T-Mobile. You have to turn it. Mr. Wood.
May it please the court. This case involves an Indian executive who received some of T-Mobile's highest awards, but was terminated after he opposed discriminatory and retaliatory conduct. At summary judgment, where credibility determinations are forbidden, the district court based its opinion entirely on what it determined Tank's British boss, Neville Ray, honestly believed. That holding was wrong for three primary reasons. First, the district court ignored the role of HR Director Mavers, both as a decision maker or at a minimum as an influencer of that decision, under the Supreme Court's Staub doctrine. Second, the court focused exclusively on the issue of pretext, but then ignored Mr. Tank's evidence of pretext that showed Mr. Ray could not have honestly believed the reasons identified. And third, the court took a tile-by-tile approach to the mosaic of circumstantial evidence Mr. Tank presented that would allow him to prevail. The facts show that Mr. Tank opposed discriminatory conduct by managers under his supervision, including mocking Indian accents, referring to there not being enough curry spices in Kansas City, waving arms like a Hindu god. He then was retaliated against by his local HR manager. On May 19th, he complained to Mr. Mavers about that retaliatory harassment, and again on May 20th, complained to him about that retaliatory harassment by providing him a written document describing it, a fact which Mr. Mavers disputes. Days later, by May 25th, HR had contacted and launched an investigation, contacted corporate investigations to launch an investigation of Mr. Tank, but never investigated his complaints of discrimination or harassment. HR controlled the investigation, handpicked the investigator, helped decide what issues would be investigated, permitted corporate investigations to meet with a secret confidential informant who was asked to provide a list of managers who were unhappy with Mr. Tank. And this is all during a process in which Mr. Ray told Mr. Tank to, quote, watch out for HR and keep them happy. Mr. Mavers then jumped the gun by recommending Mr. Tank's termination early before the investigation was over, a fact which, again, he also disputes. No one followed up on any of the information provided by Mr. Tank. Mavers prepared talking points, which Mr. Ray read at his termination meeting, and at his deposition, Mr. Ray could not even identify the document that he relied upon in terminating Mr. Tank. All of this establishes that Mr. Mavers was, in fact, a decision maker or, at a minimum, an influencer, and therefore his retaliatory motives and discriminatory motives can be inferred as a basis for decision. The district court found Ray did not honestly, or found that Tank did not provide evidence that Ray did not honestly believe the reasons, but there was ample evidence in the record that showed that Ray knew the reasons were not true. As it relates to expenditures that Mr. Tank was accused of making inappropriately, Ray and Mr. Tank had conversations about his involvements in charities, about the types of expenditures that he was making. There was a budget review committee meeting. His expenditures were well within the budget. And there were many opportunities in which that could have been raised, including a meeting on June 9th at which T-Mobile celebrated Mr. Tonk's and T-Mobile's involvement with the particular charity at issue. There are numerous other examples of pretext relating to each of the reasons that the investigators relied upon in deciding to recommend, I'm sorry, that Mr. Mavers relied upon in deciding to recommend Mr. Tonk's termination, all of which show, as a part of the convincing mosaic of evidence that he presented, that his termination was both discriminatory and retaliatory. That includes evidence that he was treated like a second-class vice president by being denied assignments, being denied credit for assignments, that his evaluation scores were lowered, that Mr. Ray himself had mocked an Indian accent, and the record is replete with disputed facts over ultimately how the decision to terminate him was reached, both as to when or if Mr. Mavers was the first person to recommend termination, and whether or not insubordination was a basis for that decision, as Mr. Ray now claims in his declaration. Ultimately, all of that evidence is evidence a jury could rely upon in showing that Mr. Mavers and Mr. Ray were both engaging in discrimination in terminating his and retaliation in terminating his employment. The district court also granted summary judgment on the basis of Mr. Tonk's pay discrimination claim, despite admissions that Mr. Tonk held the same position as other vice presidents, reported to the same decision maker as other vice presidents, and had their salary determined under the same policy as other vice presidents. It seems clear the district court missed the evidence that Mr. Tonk was similarly situated to those individuals because it then relied on conduct after the alleged decision at issue in determining that Mr. Tonk was not similarly situated to other vice presidents. T-Mobile attempts to correct that error by focusing on other factors, but there's no evidence in the record whatsoever that Mr. Ray relied upon those factors in setting Mr. Tonk's pay. So from that perspective, his discriminatory pay and a discriminatory base salary is yet another piece of evidence that helps show provide a mosaic to show that he was, in fact, discriminated against.
Well, these similarly situated people, they were all VPs, right? But your client didn't highlight their work experience, their qualifications, their educational background, who they reported to, whether they were compensated in the same manner as Tank, did they?
Partially correct, Your Honor. With respect to who they reported to, it is an admitted fact that they held the same position and reported to the same decision maker, Mr. Ray, who decided their pay under the policy. The district court discounted evidence of their background, but under this court's decisions in Coleman versus Donahoe and Eaton versus Indiana, it was incumbent upon T-Mobile to show that those factors mattered in the decision. Otherwise, the inference of discrimination that arises from the satisfying the prima facie case stands. If the factors aren't factors that he took into account, they cannot be used to distinguish who is similarly situated from Mr. Tonk. I see that, Your Honor, as I'm in my rebuttal time, so I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Wood. Mr. Lapp.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judges, Mr. Tank criticizes the district court for several reasons. He criticizes the district court for applying the wrong legal standard. He criticizes the district court for supposedly ignoring his facts. He criticizes the district court for supposedly putting an affirmative burden on Mr. Tank to prove or to show a tribal issue of fact on the issue of pretext, at least with respect to his discrimination claim. He also criticizes the court, as we just heard, for failing to appreciate the alleged significance of John Mavers' role in the termination. None of those issues require reversal. None have merit. But before we address those arguments, I think we'll step back and look at the framework that we have here. First, the court was completely correct in saying whatever circumstantial evidence you have has to point directly to a discriminatory reason for termination. Second, on the issue of pretext, the courts do not sit to second-guess an employer's good-faith business judgment. As long as the reason's honestly held, and the evidence here is undisputed it was, then that's sufficient. The inquiry is over. Similarly with an investigation, that it could have been done in a different way, that the plaintiff or plaintiff appellant could find fault with it or nitpick, doesn't get him anywhere on the issue of pretext. And last, and particularly relevant in this case, is on summary judgment, we all know the standard of only drawing reasonable inferences. Repeatedly in this case, this record has been twisted and distorted to characterizations that support the narrative being portrayed, but don't reflect the record evidence. To just briefly set the recap here, the termination in 2010 had its roots in 2008. Significant in that 2008 discipline was the directive to remove a certain individual from T-Mobile's workforce. That was accomplished, that was done, that's undisputed. We fast forward to 2010, where it's undisputed there were two independent complaints that arrived in the company raising issues with Mr. Tank's conduct. Those were investigated by corporate investigations. Corporate investigations made findings and conclusions, and those conclusions were reviewed by Mr. Ray. Mr. Ray made the decision to terminate Mr. Tank's employment. The district court was completely correct in finding there was no evidence that Mr. Ray did not honestly believe that. And in fact, he didn't ignore the evidence that plaintiff put forth. He says explicitly on pages A, 6 through 7 that he recognizes there's a long list of evidence being offered, but he does not find any of it persuasive. With respect to turning back to plaintiff's arguments or plaintiff appellant's arguments, let's first look at the question of whether the district court applied the wrong legal standard. It did not. The plaintiff was relying on circumstantial evidence in this case for his convincing mosaic. One of those pieces of his mosaic was...
We have said that everyone should stop talking about convincing mosaic. It is a metaphor, not a legal standard. And I'm disappointed that both the district judge and your brief have simply ignored this court's advice. It is not a legal standard. Let's talk about what the legal standard is.
Here, if we're going to step back and say, is there a reasonable inference of unlawful discrimination, one of the ways that question was attempted to be answered was by the plaintiff saying there was pretext. And the district court correctly held there was no evidence of pretext. That goes directly to the circumstantial evidence the plaintiff put forward to answer that ultimate question that this court has, in some opinions, has attempted to collapse or has collapsed the inquiry down to, could a reasonable jury find unlawful discrimination? And the question is, how is that done? Here, that was attempted to be done by showing pretext, among other things, all of which were rejected. With respect to the retaliation claim, in particular, plaintiff complains that the district court hastily dismissed the case because of the finding of pretext had not been established or there was no tribal issue of fact as to pretext. That's completely correct and consistent with this court's cases that if the the legitimate non-discriminatory reason is not found to be pretextual, then the retaliation claim fails as a matter of law. That's what happened here. With respect to the alleged involvement of Mavers, whether he was or wasn't is a so what kind of an issue. The point is, there's no evidence that Ray, and there's no evidence that Mavers didn't honestly believe the list of findings and conclusions by the corporate investigations. And last, to Your Honor's point, Judge Williams, on the pay disparity question, plaintiff here is essentially trying to reverse the burden and throw the burden on the employer to say, if I identify anyone that's paid less than me, you need to now come forward and explain that difference. The burden is therefore on you. That's not his prima facie burden. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Lapp. Anything further, Mr. Wood?
Mr. Lapp attempts to portray this court's jurisprudence as one in which pretext evidence must be shown for a plaintiff to prevail under the direct method to show either discrimination or retaliation. That is not the law, as it's been explained in the brief. He also attempts to portray Mr. Ray's belief as being good faith and honest. The record shows that Mr. Tank was encouraged to engage in the very civic opportunities that he was engaging in to help spend T-Mobile's money because it helped T-Mobile deliver business results. In several conversations with Mr. Tank, Mr. Ray encouraged him of that. Mr. Ray was aware that this was going on, as evidenced by his participation in a June 9th meeting, at which time he said nothing was wrong. As to Maver's role in the corporate investigations process, it inherently matters because it was explained to him, explained to them by Mr. Tank and others that the vendor that Mr. Tank allegedly was involved in bringing back to T-Mobile, number one, that he was not involved in bringing that vendor back, and number two, that he had taken steps to, again, remove that vendor once he returned. All of this is evidence that can help show that there was no honest belief as to the reasons for the decision. As to the pay claim, we are in no way trying to flip the burden. We're merely applying this court's jurisprudence in the decisions cited in our brief as to, like, for example, Eaton versus Indiana Department of Corrections that says, you must show that individuals are similarly situated to each other in all material respects. For something to be material, it had to have influenced the decision. And here there's no evidence that the information that the district court relied upon or that T-Mobile now relies upon influenced the decision with respect to the pay claim. Ultimately, what we have is someone who, that within days of complaining of retaliatory harassment by HR, was subject to an investigation by corporate investigations and HR, and who was terminated for conduct that was celebrated elsewhere, and that Mavers acknowledged in his own conversations with another witness, the expenditures ultimately were not a problem. All of that is evidence that can help show that discriminatory and retaliatory motives of T-Mobile in both terminating Mr. Tank and denying him an equal base salary. Unless your honors have other questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.